Welcome to the Hey Soul Sister podcast, where Mel Histon will guide you through life's big questions and bring you one step closer to doing this crazy journey as best you can.
Hey Soul Sisters, today we're talking about success, or how we can live a fulfilling and successful life according to our own values. And so I have a very special guest on the Zoom today. We're Zooming into the Newcastle podcast studio with the fabulous, the soulful, the amazing Michelle Bowditch. Hey, Shell.
Hey, Mel. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday. I'm so excited to have you on Hey Soul Sister because you've just done so many extraordinary things. And I think we really need to hear that. Like, as women, I love to hear the stories of extraordinary women who've done really different and unusual things. So, for example, Soul Sisters, Michelle founded the Australian Admin Awards. That is cool. So she's the CEO of the Australian Assembly of Administrators, and she also founded the multi-award winning consulting agency Door 20A. And I'm like, that is cool.
Two businesses. I call it my fourth and fifth child, Mel.
Your fourth and fifth child, I love it. And you know what, you do keynote presentations, workshops around the world for massive global brands like Optus, American Express, Qantas, News Corp Australia, Deloitte. You're out there, you're kicking goals, you're doing amazing things. And I first met Michelle I think it was through Business Chicks.
Yeah, it was in Vegas.
Yeah, there you go. So, I love that. You know, it's the beauty of women connections, and especially women in business connecting with other women and learning and inspiring and motivating each other, which I really love. Now, you have quite a story, which I only know part of.
Yeah. I think the thing is, I think why we get on so well, Mel, is the connection with Newcastle. And also, I have done a lot, but I am in my last year of my 40s. So I would hope that over 49 years that I've had some fun along the way. I've climbed a few mountains. I've rolled down a few hills into the valley. Got myself back up there. But look, I actually did high school, funnily enough, in Newey. I am the eldest of four siblings. And my dad was a solid plasterer, so I come from a very tradey family, you know, steak and three veg on the table every night of the week, and we had fish and chips on Friday night at the local chip shop. And but Dad semi-retired when I was turning 15, and they were moving to a place back then called Coolum. And I'm going, where are you going? I am not leaving Sydney. I love Sydney. My mum and dad gave me a choice and said, you can go live with your grandparents up in Port Stephens. And I do remember in my younger years, my grandparents were a huge influence on me. And one of my other loves is horse racing, which I know that you're going to absolutely adore, because every Saturday, dad would go to work, mum would go to her part-time job and drop me and my brother off at Nan and Pop's. I'd go to netball, my brother would go to rugby. But before that, we would walk into Nan and Pop's house and they would give us $5. So remember $5 49 years ago. We got the form guide out and we were able to spend our $5 on any horses that we wanted to over the day. And it was so much fun because my Pop and Nan, who had both passed away, Pop was a Damien Oliver fan and Nan was a Gay Waterhouse. So there was a lot of conflict in the, you know, that. But, you know, it was that first time that I remember of creating traditions and having values and how that stemmed back. So anyway, going back to the story, mum and dad semi-retired up to Coolum. I stomped my foot in the ground, became a bit of a rebel and said I'm not going. So they sent me up to my grandparents' house and I used to catch the bus in every day into St. Francis Xavier in Newey.
A couple of my kids went to St. Francis Xavier and friends and girlfriends.
And I still remember because every Thursday night we used to go to the Hemo and the Screaming Jets were back then. And yeah. I mean, you know, back in those days, going to a pub was a thing you used to do. So kind of Newcastle was my thing for year 11 and 12, loved it. My brother and I, Adam, were 13 months apart. And then there's a big gap between my next two siblings, which is Stephen and Leanne. So there's a 10-year and a 15-year gap. And Stephen, who is a professional golfer, he's based in the US, and I did grow up in a golfing family. I proclaim I can't play golf. All the great golfers teach me how to play golf, but I got on the golf course or on the driving range and all I did was talk. So I remember Greg Norman and Adam Scott and all those great guys having, you know, given me lessons, and they said, Michelle, you'd be really great at this game, you talk too much. But my brother got given an opportunity when I was 20 years old to go over and play in the US amateur golf. So I went across and I said, yes, who wants to go to the US when you're 20? It's a free trip. So
absolutely.
I went across and, you know, what I thought I was going to do, I got into University of Sports Medicine. That's what I thought I was going to do. So I deferred, did a bit of travel, did Kentucky along the way, you know, those fun things.
Absolutely.
And went over to the US. My brother came runner-up in one, won another two events. So I ventured around as on the golf circuit for a couple of years, caddying, managing, getting involved in events.
So was that would have been fun, caddying for your brother, traveling around America.
He thought I was the bossy big sister and I was so strict, like I wouldn't let him go out at night. You've got a big tournament tomorrow. And like he was, you know, considerably younger and he was trying to play with the big boys. But it was just an adventure. Like I think that was my first adventure that I went on in life that I saw because I had to learn different skills. I was in a country, you know, talking about Mexico, which you've just been to, took him to Mexico for the first time and I'm like going, what is this place? And it was super scary. But
you know, I bet.
I think that was the first time also that, Mel, I realised how great I was organising stuff. Because I just got, as we say, shit done. And I was great at organising from his event itinerary to turning up, being dressed in all the clothing that all the sponsors were throwing at us. So that was my first little adventure in my first career, which I didn't think I would do.
I love it. Your first career was a golf caddy over in the States. Okay, just quickly, who is your favourite celebrity golfer?
So I actually, in the old days, I liked Phil Mickelson.
Oh.
Which is, I wouldn't say that now. I say it really softly. I admired the way he walked on a golf course, the way he presented himself, because I was all about the look. And he was kind of like that mature, I mean, I haven't even know what he looks like now. And, you know, we all loved Greg Norman. And, you know, I had stints where I was part of the Greg Norman Foundation with my brother because he was living in Queensland. So he was kind of taken up as a Queenslander. Mind you, Stephen was born in Newcastle. So I feel like I've got the Newcastle piece again. So golf became my thing. I loved hanging out in corporate boxes. I loved the big events. And then I had to grow up. I came back to Australia, as I call it, grew up. And then I stayed in event management, but then I got into the wine side of the world.
Oh.
Still didn't know what a Pinot Noir versus a Shiraz was, but because apparently I organised cool events and I was cool at organising events, I started to work on the event side. So I worked with brands like Penfolds, Rosemount, Lindemann's, Bollinger, Henschke, all these cool brands. So that was kind of my next career that I did in the big corporate world and absolutely loved it, traveled the world, did vintage, got to go over to Royal Ascot races with Bollinger a couple of years in a row, so the horse racing piece came back in.
Okay, I feel like you were living your dream life in your 20s already.
Well, when you're single and you kind of, I don't know, I felt like I had no responsibility, Mel. Like I was responsible, but I didn't have responsibilities or ties here. And, you know, coming from a working class family, as I call what I did get brought up with, you know, Dad gave us a really solid foundation, work hard, play hard and earn lots of money. So that kind of happened. And then I fell in love. And, you know, that was marriage number one. I had two boys very, very quickly. So I've got William and Thomas. They're now 19 and 20. So they're 13 months apart. And it's funny because my brother and I are close, so the boys are close. I fell pregnant, unplanned, accidentally was at the peak of my career. Went, oh, I can't be pregnant. You know, you're going to ruin my career. You know, then found myself a few years later going through a divorce. And I think if we go back to the values piece, which is really important as a female, as a woman, as a leader, you know, My grandparents who taught me how to punt and bet, the values that they instilled that I was the person that would have the white picket fence with the husband and live that happily ever after. So I think this was the first time that I recognised a trauma or a tragedy. And obviously, you know, you've got an amazing tragedy and the trauma that I went through was certainly nothing compared to some of what these women experienced. But, you know, my belief was that was how life was meant to be.
Yeah.
And here I am in a situation where the divorce was ugly. I spent 5 years in and out of the federal family court, which is not pleasant.
That's tough. That's a challenge.
It is. And I was left with the kids originally. I had fallen pregnant with Sienna. So there's a 5 and 6 year gap between the boys and my daughter. And he was the father of three children. So it was it was yuck. And I made, I'm going to tell you, Mel, we make mistakes, and I made a hell of a lot of mistakes during that divorce. Do I regret it? No, I don't, because I think what I learned during that is the type of person that I am and that I should be. But just, you know, you can never prepare yourself for being a parent, and you've had children, so you know what it's
absolutely
like.
Yeah,
you give birth and you lose that, you know, sense of freedom and ownership, and you've got this human being that you need to care for, and then, you know, divorce comes along, and you've been through that as well, and, you know, and it was ugly. I can't sugarcoat it. I made so many mistakes. He made a hell of a lot as well, and, you know, it was yuck, Mel.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's funny, I was just recording an episode earlier today, and we were talking about divorce. You go, that's one of the hardest, most challenging things you can go through is divorce.
Yeah.
And I had to navigate for, you know, several years that whole single mother piece. And it's really interesting. You do get labelled. You can't run away from it. They do label, oh, you're a single mum with three kids. And it's like, well, no, my name is Michelle, and I'm a great person, and I can do the job. So there was a lot of that. I did a slight tree change for a couple of years, and I went out to Orange. And
oh, wow.
I didn't know that about you. Orange is great, isn't it? I tell you what, if you're going to do a tree change, Orange is a really great town.
Yeah. And then unfortunately, well, not unfortunately, but fortunately, we were back in court, so I had to come back to Sydney. And I found myself quite lost when I came back to Sydney. And it was like I'd known the corporate world. I'd traveled the world, you know, I knew all of that, and I was lost. I had no confidence. You know, I turn up on the podcast today and I have confidence, but that's because of the amount of hits and knockdowns and the gullies that I've landed in. And I said to myself, I love being a mother. I have to own this season of life. And I think that was the first time that I recognized also about owning your season of life, or where you are on that journey. And I just said to myself, I came back to Sydney, I moved to Ryde, where I still live today. I didn't know anything about Ryde, but I basically said, I've got this amount of money to spend. I need a 3-bedroom house. I need to be close to this, close to that. And this is, you know, where I landed. And then I said to myself, from a career wise, I can't go back to the big career because I had to, you know.
You got babies, you got children. Yeah.
You know, one was at school, one was just about to start school, and the other one was still breastfeeding. So I went, I'm going to become a receptionist. You know, my skills, I'm great at organizing, I'm a people person. So I literally, I think it was 1.5 kilometers from home, there was this receptionist job, and I thought, this is going to be great. I can do school drop off and pick up. And I remember walking into the interview, and the HR person wasn't available. And this guy comes out and he goes, oh, hi, I'm David. And I said, oh, hi, David, Michelle, I'm here for the interview. He goes, oh, she's running late, blah, blah. Anyway, this gentleman, you know, said, come on, come and sit down, we'll have a chat. Anyway, we just started talking, and we talked for 90 minutes about food, family and sport. I'm a Parramatta Eels supporter. He was a Rabbitohs supporter, and he still is. And, you know, obviously there's a bit of a clash with that. And I had no idea he was the CEO at the time. We just sat down and we had this most amazing, we talked about values, and he was a punter, and we talked about things we did as kids, you know, how our grandparents brought us up, and he'd gone through it. He was in the knee deep of a messy, ugly divorce as well. Anyway, long story short, that was my first executive assistant role.
Wow. You walk in there to be a receptionist and you walk out the executive assistant after chatting to the CEO for an hour and a half.
And he was in financial services and financial planning. So I, you know, acronyms were being thrown at me in that role of, you know, GST, BAS, ABNs. I had no idea what that was. I knew how to lodge my tax return. I gave it to, you know, H&R Block back in those days, and they did my tax return and all of that. So we navigated. I sat in boardroom meetings. You know, I built a house for him. I, you know, got his three kids through private high school, driving them. So I was kind of a personal executive assistant as well as a professional one. That relationship ended. He was going on a different path, semi-retiring, found love again, all those kind of things. And then I found myself again going, okay, I love being an EA. This is fantastic. So we're talking 10 years plus that I was with him. And because I live so close to home, I wanted to stay in that remit. So I went, right, what's close to home? And I remember meeting a recruiter, and she said to me, and at that stage, I didn't understand what recruitment was. I wasn't on LinkedIn. I didn't do any of that. And she said to me, she said, I think you need to go and work for a female boss. And I, excuse my French, I said, aren't female bosses all bitchy, you know, blah, blah, blah. She said, Mish, it's going to test you. You need to challenge yourself. You know, you're in your 40s. You know, you've got so much more to give. And I said, as long as I'm close to home. So my next job, which was my last corporate role, was working at Schneider Electric. So light switches, solar panels. You know, I had no idea what solar panels were. I knew they were on the roofs and they were the ugly things. Anyway, I went to work for two incredible VPs. Schneider is a French company, so they speak in vice president land instead of CEO land or MD land. Anyway, had the most amazing opportunity. Her name is Priti Bajaj. She is now CEO of Luminous and based in India, so huge corporation. Wow. We were same age, highly, highly intelligent. She had so many dips and eds and studied and was so academically trained. And I walked in, I was scared of her because I came to the table with no academic credentialing like she had. And I think that was the first time that I'd actually realized what imposter syndrome meant and all that. But she was incredible because she was always pushing me. She'd never met anyone like me. And the funny thing is, being an EA, you know, you organize people's lives, days, diaries, and calendar. And she was the most disorganized person. And I remember she would give me her handbag and I'd be looking for receipts to reconcile expenses. And literally I'd go into this handbag that was like a suitcase and I'd stick my hands in. I never knew what was going to come out. She was Indian. She had big black locky hair. So there was always hair in a handbag. And, you know, we journeyed and she was constantly pushing me and challenging me. And I think I was reignited in my career and knowing that I was a woman that could own my space, own my cred, who I was. And then literally one day, I was leaving on Friday afternoon, we had created boundaries. And I think that imposter syndrome as well as creating boundaries was the first time that I really understood what that meant. And every second Friday I used to leave the office at 2:30 to do school pickup for my daughter. My boys were living with me full time. My daughter still went back and forth to her father's. And then every second Monday I did the same thing as well, come to work late to drop her off. Anyway, walking out the door, said, "See you, pretty, have a great weekend." And she said to me, "We need to be in Silicon Valley on Monday. We've got to do an incubation." And I looked at her and went, "What does that even mean?" She said, "Don't worry, just sort out the flights. We'll figure out the rest." And, you know, that was that next piece about people entering your life for a reason in a season, as I say it. Yeah. And she came on board, never had a female leader. She came on board for a specific reason, specific task. So for the next 6 months, we navigated an incubation between Sydney and Silicon Valley. And I was challenged yet again with my mindset, my thinking. You know, we're talking 2017, 2018. So this is before the world we're in. We're sitting on Zoom.
Yeah.
If I said to you back then, "Oh, have you met Mr. Zoom or Mr. Slack or have you used Microsoft Teams?" You'd look at me as if I was talking in a foreign language. And I got to do all of that, you know, the back and forth from Silicon Valley, how to commute, how to organize airfares, you know, how to operate in a totally different language. You know, I was Priti and I were the oldest. Most of the people that were in the incubation were in their 20s. And it was just an incredible experience. And I think I knew that I had more to give. And I, you know, I'm now 49. It's like age isn't a number. It shouldn't define you. It's how you manage the journey that you're on in that season of life.
How did you navigate to and from Silicon Valley for 6 months with children as a single mom?
You know, at the beginning, it was all fun and games. Oh, it was exciting, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I reckon I'd be a platinum lifetime member of Uber Eats if that existed. So the weeks that I didn't have my daughter, I'd drop her off at school, drop off and get on the 12:30 San Francisco flight and then go across there, do what I need to do and then come home on the Friday afternoon. The incubation would jump between Australia and San Francisco. So they would bring the team back for one fortnight or 1-3 weeks and then we would go back. And with an incubation, you have different stages that you've got to get through, like check-in points. Often you don't get past the third round of check-ins. So, you know, we weren't expecting to go very far during the 6 months. We were expecting, say, 7 to 8 weeks, but we got along the journey. And it was really hard. I mean, I would have to have someone come in and help the boys out in the house. They thought it was freedom because they could order unlimited Uber Eats when no one was home. But I was on Sunday was my planning day and I still call it my strategic planning day. I do the groceries and then I would cook meals. I would label them up in containers. And my eldest son, he would put alfoil in the microwave. So I think I went through several microwaves during the time. I used to have to write and label the food, spaghetti bolognese, move the lid to the sideways, 3 minutes and 30 seconds, then stir, put in bowl. So there was strict instructions.
Yeah.
It was hard. At the beginning, it was fun, Mel. Like, who doesn't want to get on a plane and, you know, sit in business class and, you know, by the end of it was exhausted. And the business became incubated and was funded, and it now exists as Clips or Solar. It was an incredible journey. But I think for me, it was that piece around how do we continue to stay relevant and how do we continue to keep thinking about and being that best version of ourselves. And yet again, I said before, age isn't a number. So, you know, 2018 was fun. Then comes the beginning of 2019. And I still remember that day we were sitting in a co-working space. So think back in 2019, co-working spaces are everywhere. Back then, you know, that's how we existed. We just popped up. We use a Work Inc or we use a WhatsApp or all the ones, the Hub or whatever it was, wherever we needed to go. And we're sitting around the table in this one room, and Pretty turns around and said, "Mish, I don't need you anymore." And I went, "What do you mean you don't need me?" And the whole, you could have dropped a pin and heard it explode. And she said, "I need your salary. I don't need a six-figure C-suite EA. This business doesn't need that. I need to spend your money elsewhere in the businesses." It was a really interesting process because I felt like I was kind of kicked in the guts. But then she wasn't actually kicking me in the guts. She was actually saying, and she literally said to me, "Go out there. The world's your oyster. You can do whatever you want." But, you know, I'm still a single mum. I've still got a mortgage to pay. I've still got food to put on the table. And you know, that was my first immediate reaction. How am I going to pay for this? How am I going to do for this? But she was, you know, I take my hat off today to Pretty. You know, she stands up in an industry that is full of men. She's in India now. Like, she's freaking incredible. And it's like, go for it. Life's too short. What have you got to lose? That's kind of up to 2019 until my corporate days ended. And I took the leap of faith, which was really hard. But I had an incredible partner. And I still have my incredible partner, mind you, fiance now, I should say that. Yeah. And he just said to me, "I've got your back. If you want to try something new, just go and do it."
Want to save your soul? Review us on Apple Podcast.
So can you share that story that you've told me about how you were at a luncheon or something and there was the person, because when you were telling me, it sounded like this was the beginning of your business, Door 28.
This conversation with Pretty happened in the February 2019. I was already pre-booked to go and do a panel discussion at an EA event, but I'd finished work, but we had agreed that I was still employed. So anyway, two-day conference. I was on the second day on the panel talking about, I can't even remember the topic. Anyway, day one comes and a gentleman gets up on stage and he was talking about the impacts of technology and what was happening in Silicon Valley, right? And I was in my pink suit, and for those that know me or, if you know, check me out on Door 28. Red and pink is my color, and I often wear bright colors. So I had a pink suit on that day, and he's on stage, and I'm not joking. The stuff that was coming out of his mouth was BS. It was just total BS. And I was like, you know, I've got a red neck now, but like I was like a red beecher of fury. The girls are looking at me going, "Are you okay?" And I said, "No." I said, "That's not what's happening." I said, "I am less than 6 months back in Australia after doing an incubation." I said, "That's not what's happening." I said, "Where is his data?" Anyway, came to Q&A time, put up my hand, told him who I was and said, "Look, I was in Silicon Valley. This is what we discovered on our incubation. This is what the projects were happening," and basically called his bullshit.
Yeah.
And next minute I'm up on stage with a microphone on hand, sharing with 250 executive assistants and talking to them about the impacts of technology. And we sit here today, you know, the buzzword at the moment is ChatGPT. I love it. It has been around forever. But again, we see this fear that encroaches on people because they don't understand it, they don't have control, and the immediate reaction is technology is going to take my job.
Can I just say I'm obsessed with ChatGPT and It Got Your Back, Sister, we are too. Like, we absolutely love it.
Yes. So if you're in Microsoft Teams world, I encourage you to look at Bing, B-I-N-G. It's the extension now in Microsoft 365, so you've got it all built in. Yeah. Like, I'm up on stage, and I think I found my voice then to really go, when you know your stuff and you're in an area of expertise and your remit is what you know, it comes out naturally, it's authentic, it's real. And you can share that story. So I called his bullshit, got up on stage. The gentleman will never speak to me again. And you know what, Mel? That is okay, because it made me realize the potential that I have. And also that piece about sharing your story. You've got this podcast here and you share stories of real conversations, real life journeys. And I think we as women don't share enough because we get scared.
Yeah.
We get the imposter syndrome.
And do you know what? And it's so funny. We were just talking before on another. I've recorded a few episodes today, and we were talking about the stories that we tell ourselves, you know, and the impact that we have. The stories we tell ourselves, about the world, about other people. Sadly, that as women, we tell ourselves these stories about I'm not good enough. You know, something might have happened in our past where we've been told to shut up, sit down. Our opinion isn't valued. All of that. And so we do. We kind of sit back often and hide, which is what I love about you. I love that you.
Piece again, like, you know, I was, how can a single mum go and start her business? And that for 6 to 12 months, I was labelled, you know, they wanted to know my story. They wanted to know how Door 28 was created. Why are you doing it? How can you do it? You know, how are you going to back yourself? And I think it's that self-belief of, you know, and, you know, Door 28 now is a mentoring tech strategy and cheerleading business. And I think, you know, that cheerleading piece, we have to cheerlead for ourselves. And if we, and it is a doubles game. If we don't cheerlead for ourselves, how can we cheerlead for others?
Yeah.
And when we don't offer kindness, and because, you know, we've all got our story, let's share it and let's celebrate, or cheerlead, as I say, their story. They own it, because we're all individuals. We're all unique. And I think, you know, that is that piece about that label. Oh, she's just Mel Hitson from Newcastle. What would she know? Like, it's that we get put in a box, or we get labelled with a number. She's 49. What would she know? She's old. She's a has-been. So
I got two words to say to that. J-Lo.
Yeah. And I think, like, you know, I have two businesses now, and, you know, the hustle is real, running businesses, as you know, but I truly love it. And I think, you know, I challenged myself again I lost 2 years with the COVID thing, 2020. And I failed English at school, and you know, people who know me know that I can't spell very well, and there's often spelling mistakes unless someone in my team writes it. But, you know, I went out and wrote a research paper, a white paper that was published by Harvard. Like, wow. Who doesn't do that stuff? So there's that piece around, you know, what you want to do, what you need you to do, and then what you think you can do. And I think, you know, I'm coming off a 75-day challenge. I'm, as I said, 50 in June. I'm going to walk the Camino in May. And, you know, I had to prep my mind and body to walk the Camino, because you just don't get up out of bed and go, I'm getting on a plane and I'm going to go walk the Camino for 444 kilometres. So it's that piece about the mindset, creating boundaries, owning who you are, having your cheerleaders along that journey. And have I always had the right cheerleaders? No. I've had to throw pom-poms away because they were shitty cheerleaders and they weren't authentic and real. But, you know, we learn as we go, Mel.
Yeah. So that would they be your biggest life lessons so far?
I think always go back, you know, go back to my nan and pop on the Saturday with the bets and the $5 is, you know, what values were instilled with you when you were young, and ensure that those values continue along every journey or path that you go along. And I think I have been caught, you know, I've made a hell of a lot of mistakes, but am I better for it? 110%. And am I going to make more? Probably I will.
But you know what I love about you, Mish, is that you were talking earlier about going through your divorce, and you're like, I made mistakes. I did things wrong. But I love that you own that, because so many people don't. They don't own their mistakes. And that it's everybody else's fault, or, you know, I didn't do that. But it's like, you know what, yeah, okay, I made mistakes, but I learned from it.
You know, I think go back to your core values of what you were taught, because I think, you know, our grandparents are so, you know, they were old school. We had no social media. We had no Zoom. You know, we used to come home when the sun was going down and had no idea what it is. We used to have chocos growing on the fence line, and used to throw chocos at the neighbours that we didn't like. So, you know, there's so I just love the story. So, but I also think, you know, for me, it's about showing up as, you know, even when I'm having shitty days, if I can cheerlead for one person, and whether it be, you know, a voice audio DM, which I've sent you many, and, you know, or a message on Instagram or LinkedIn, it's just nice to do something when you offer kindness. And we don't know how, you know, you can look at social media and what is actually going on versus reality is a very different story. So, you know, if I see something and I think she's not right or he's having a shitty day, I'll just show up with hey, Mel, thinking of you, hope you're having a good day. And did that cost me anything?
Yeah, absolutely.
And do you know what? I love that about you, because I know you're sitting here talking about cheerleading and you're talking about lifting up other people, but I actually see that you do it, because some people talk about it, but I go, I see that you do it. And I know, you know, I'm so grateful for your support and kindness showing up to my last event that I held. I was like, oh my goodness, the girls drove from Sydney up for my event.
I know. And I think it's that piece, like, you know, I said before, I've had not good cheerleaders in my corner backing me. And I think because sometimes I went for that shiny object, I looked at that piece, and, you know, we do get caught up in life of, you know, looking at that shiny object and instead of actually understanding what the values are and the outcomes are. So for me, it's really ensuring that I have the right cheerleaders. And, you know, I think, Mel, for what you're doing for a charity and your purpose and all that, I haven't been a victim of domestic violence. I'm so fortunate I have no one around me. But just to see that huge, to you it might be little, but huge impact you make to so many. And, you know, sitting in that room that day for your luncheon just recently, and I was bawling my eyes out, you know, and I just go, how incredible is it for someone like you to create a charity? And then we had that beautiful mother got up on stage and shared a story about her daughter. And I want to do more. I want to be a better person. Because I think when something like that happens to me, not domestic violence, but if I am in a season of tragedy or trauma, I know my cheerleaders will be there to back me, just like I did for you.
Yeah.
So, my friend, what are you most proud of?
Oh, my children.
Yeah.
I am. I've got three beautiful children, you know. I've got the fourth-year electrician. I've got the second-year carpenter. And do you think my light switches are working in my But they're beautiful human beings. And, you know, I think the gentleness and the kindness that my boys offer is just incredible. The love they have for their mother is amazing. And my daughter's 15. She's still navigating life. But I still talk about, you know, the horse racing story. You know, a big horse race will come up and I say to the kids, okay, I pull the form guide out like the old days and I said, okay, choose your favourite horse and your colour or your number. And they've, you know, the boys understand it now because they love the races and, you know, the drinking and all that. But my daughter has no idea. So I think for me it's my children and just continue, you know, just showing up. And I love cheerleading. Even though I don't have proper pom-poms and tutus, I feel, you know, in my head I've got them. And I just want to live my best life.
You certainly are, and I love that. I love that about you. What do you think are the most important qualities for a leader to possess?
I always say you've got to lead from the top and you've got to show with your actions.
Yeah.
So if you're making a decision in business and you're not actually doing it yourself, then how can you be a great leader? And it's really funny. I just finished reading a book by Dr. Kirsten Ferguson. It's called Heart and Head Leadership. I encourage your listeners to get it. And it's funny, you can go online to her website and you can do a free leadership analysis of who you are, whether you're a heart leader or a head leader. And I thought in the last 12 months I've become tougher and I've become a head leader. Anyway, and I told my girlfriends, I'm doing this thing, you know, this testing, and I said, I'm sure I'm a head leader now. And they said, there's no way, Mish, you're a heart leader. Anyway, I did it and the results came out and told me I was a heart leader. I'm going, I'm a heart leader. I want to be a head leader.
I want to be a head leader.
But I think for me it is, it's setting, you know, as I say to my children, it's setting the example. So the way you behave is the way that your team will behave. So, and like you, I've got all females working at the AAAs. They're all mothers. So, you know, they're on their set days with their set rhythm of working. But, you know, for me to get the best quality out of them, you know, I'm fully transparent with them and they're fully transparent with me. So don't try and do something that you're not great at. What you're great at, do that really, really well. And then the stuff that you suck at, outsource it or get someone else to do it. So for me, it's always about leading from the top. So setting the example. So if I say I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it. You know, and if it's a bit like the hybrid working model at the moment. You know, we've got so many CEOs coming out there and saying, hey, we're going to be back in the office 3 days a week. And they're coming in 1 day a week.
Yeah. Yeah.
How can you lead from the top and set the example for the young? And then they've got issues in their, you know, large corporates because their staff engagement is so low and they can't get people back to the workplace. So if you're not leading from the top and setting that example, how can the rest of the team come on that journey with you?
Let's get soulful on social media. Search the Sister Code Facebook page and follow us on Instagram.
Okay, my friend, and final question. What advice would you give to other women who are aspiring entrepreneurs and business leaders? Because I know a lot of women that they're either climbing the corporate ladder, but they want their own business. They want to be an entrepreneur. What advice would you give to those women?
Well, first of all, as Knife says, just do it. second of all, have your cheerleaders around you and understand that the way you start your business to where you get to along that journey is not going to look and feel the same. And I think it's about be prepared to fall, but be prepared to get back up stronger and brighter and smarter. And I think this piece is when you start a business, and you probably know this, Mel, is, you know, the idea of the way it's going to look and the way it's going to feel and the rhythm and all of that, it's not that way. And just, you know, I think I always say stay in your lane of area of expertise.
Yeah.
So go and sell that piece of clothing or offer that service that you're really, really, really good at and stay in that lane. And yes, you might do a few other things on the side, but don't try and be everything to everyone. Just offer your area of expertise and stay in your lane and own it.
Oh, my friend. Well, thank you so much for coming and sharing your story. I love your story. It's so interesting. You've like traveled the world, done the most amazing things. It's just wonderful.
And I think it's that piece, you know, I want to go traveling again. Like I'm going to say that 50 is the new 21.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I'm absolutely bigger, I'm stronger. Like after doing a 75-day challenge, dropping a bit of weight, carrying a 10-kilo weight of vest and walking 100 Ks a week, you just don't get up and go, oh, I've done that today.
Absolutely. Well, thank you. I can't wait to see you again. Thank you so much for sharing your wonderful story. You're certainly one soul sister, amazing cheerleader, businesswoman, entrepreneur. You're absolutely killing it and supporting so many women along the way. So thank you.
Thanks for listening to Hey Soul Sister with Mel Histon. What would help you on your crazy life journey? Email Melissa at thesistercode.com.